A lot of talk these days about wages. You know, are we earning enough? Is the living wage something we should be striving towards? How is it different from the minimum wage? And Josh Healy, gentleman from the University of Melbourne, senior research fellow, joins us at the moment. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Minimum wage versus living wage. I guess, firstly, can you split the difference for us? And let's start there.
Yeah, okay, sure. Well, I mean, I think fundamentally there's not that much difference, right? So basically both of these things try to set a binding wage floor. So they say there's a level that nobody can be paid below, well, at least not legally, and that's meant to set that floor. But there's a few differences in practice, right? So one of them is that the living wage is typically set higher, so it aspires to be something more than just a bare minimum. It wants to be kind of a socially acceptable minimum, and it might also be linked to some other measure of average living standards, right? So it could be pegged, so to speak, to increases in average weekly earnings or increases in the consumer price index, although that's not very generous, but it could be pegged to some other standard so that it keeps its value over time. So I think those are the main differences. The living wage aspires to go a bit further than a minimum wage.
And I guess as well too, Josh, that depending on which part of the country you live in, living wage is going to be a little bit different. So if you're living in a major centre, a Sydney or Melbourne, or even a Newcastle, a major regional centre like us, what you need to live is going to be a little bit less than if you're in an outback town or if you're in a fairly regional remote area too.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And so sometimes what you see, like I think of the case of the United States, where they have a federal minimum wage similar to our national minimum wage. So that applies all across the country. But then a number of cities and counties in the United States have adopted their own living wages, right? And they only apply within the boundaries of that particular council area or that particular county. So yes, that's similar to what you're saying, that because of differences in costs, the basket of things that people are buying in different locations, that might vary. But what we're talking about now, and this is sort of coming from a push from the Australian Council of Trade Unions, they're looking at a living wage that would have national effect, right? So
I tell you what, Josh, just while you're on the US there, I was seeing last night their average house price across most of their nation, taking out a couple of major centres, is between $250,000 and $300,000. So we long for that here. But as far as a living wage goes, there is a push for it at the moment. What do you think are some of the big push factors that are driving this for us to go above the minimum wage for most folks?
Well, look, I think the big thing is sort of what you said in the introduction there around the fact that we're hearing a lot of stuff about wages in the news, and all of it really is around the low pace of slow pace of wages growth at the moment. So, you know, the ABS put out some new information about this yesterday, confirming that we're in a very slow phase of wage growth, really the slowest in the last two decades, right? So people are not seeing their pay packets are rising by very much year to year, so that's really slow. And so the idea of a living wage then kind of comes into this because, you know, people are feeling the pinch from those other cost of living effects, particularly, as you've said, from housing costs. We also know that there's been a bit of a shift over time in the kind of slice of the economic pie that's going to labour, to workers, as opposed to what's going to capital owners and employers. So there's been more gains going to the capital side and less going to the labour side over time. So the kind of workers' income share is shrinking in the total. And again, the ACTU, in pushing for a living wage, is trying to signal its awareness of these things and trying to sort of get out there and make people aware of it and get them behind this campaign. And they would like to see, obviously, workers taking a larger slice of the pie than they are right now.
Which, Josh, would be good for everybody, because if wage growth is stagnant or barely moving, you know, compared with everything else is going up, in effect, in real terms, that's a pay cut, which, to be honest, is really not good for anybody and not good for the economy.
Yeah, well, no, that's right. It's been sort of close. Like at the at the low end, you know, with the rate of general wage growth, you know, it's just barely above the increase in inflation, right? So on average, we're talking about meager real increases, so to speak. So people aren't feeling that their real living standard, you know, what they can afford to buy, is keeping up or improving much. And that's been, you know, that's very different from the Australians' experience in the not too distant past, when we got accustomed to, you know, a much healthier rate of wage growth.
Josh, thank you for your stats this morning. I've been making some notes. I'm about to march off into the boss's office. I'm going to ask for an extra 35%. I'm prepared to settle for 25, though.
Tell him I sent you.
I don't think that holds a lot of weight for either of us.
No, maybe not.
Thank you for joining us this morning. He's a senior research fellow from the University of Melbourne, Josh Healy, and there is a difference, is there not, between the living and the minimum wage. Fingers crossed, we can get a bit of a rise there for everybody, which would be good for everybody.